So, imagine a computer virus that doesn't just, quietly sit in the background and steal your passwords in the dark.
Right, the traditional stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Instead, imagine a virus that literally takes over your screen, opens your banking app, navigates to the transfer menu, types in an amount, and then physically clicks send while you just watch.
Oh, wow.
Right? Completely unable to stop it because it operates your phone exactly the way you do. And that terrifying scenario is, well, it's exactly where we're heading today.
It really is. I mean, it fundamentally changes the definition of a cyber threat. We are moving from code that just compromises data to code that actively operates our environments.
It's wild. And understanding how we actually get to that point requires looking at a very specific, highly consequential week in recent history. So, welcome to the deep dive. For you listening, we know you love gaining knowledge quickly but thoroughly. You want the aha moments without wading through thousands of pages of technical white papers.
Yeah, nobody has time for that.
Exactly. So today, we are doing the heavy lifting for you. We're unpacking a really fascinating internal directive. It was written in Farsi, essentially a tech manager telling their editorial team at this tech gaming site, Taking Game, to compile all the vital digital architecture shifts that occurred between June 7 and June 13, 2026.
And the resulting compilation, it just paints a picture of a 7-day period where the entire power dynamic of the digital world completely fractured.
Truly, we're talking about the birth of the orbital economy, the U.S. government literally pulling the plug on foundational AI, the crumbling of legacy web architecture, and absolute panic inside the world's biggest gaming empires.
A lot for 1 week.
It really is. So let's just jump right into it. June 13th, 2026, the SpaceX IPO.
Oh man, it is hard to overstate the scale of this event. I mean, this is a company that fiercely guarded its private operations for over 2 decades, and they finally stepped onto the public market. They initially priced it at a conservative $135 per share, aiming to raise about $75 billion. But institutional demand was just so rabid that they actually had to halt trading.
Which is crazy. And it ended up closing at $161,
Yeah, exactly.
which pushed SpaceX past a $2.05 trillion market cap on day one. And obviously, this officially crowned Elon Musk as the first verified trillionaire with a net worth of $1.1 trillion. But let's look past the sheer wealth for a second.
The real story is where that money is going.
Exactly. The liquidity distribution matrix, as they called it, because they needed a fire hose of cash for some massive projects. 10% goes to deep space R&D, 15% goes to Starlink Gen 4, 35% goes to the Starship Fleet and Mars Base Alpha. But the lion's share, 40%, which is a massive $30 billion, is earmarked for GigaSat.
Yeah, Gigaset. This is the deployment of 1 million AI-capable orbital data centers into low Earth orbit.
1 million.
Right. They aren't just launching rockets anymore. They're literally moving the Earth's computational infrastructure into space.
Okay, so I have to push back on this a little bit because, from a purely logistical standpoint, putting an AI server farm in space sounds like an absolute nightmare.
It does sound like science fiction.
Yeah, like how do you deal with the latency of beaming data up and down? And how do you even power and cool a million servers in a vacuum? It's like trying to fund an interplanetary nation. Is this just a triumph of innovation, or are we witnessing the birth of a monopoly over low Earth orbit?
Well, the engineering bottleneck is exactly what they are solving with this capital. For power, you have unfiltered solar radiation. It's available 24/7 without any atmospheric interference.
Okay, fair point.
And for cooling, well, a vacuum is an insulator, sure, but the ambient environment of low Earth orbit actually allows for advanced radiative cooling systems, systems that don't rely on terrestrial water supplies at all.
Wow, okay. But what about the latency?
That's where the 15% allocation to Starlink Gen 4 comes in. They use quantum encrypted internet to achieve sub-1 millisecond round trips.
Sub-1 millisecond. So they are genuinely building a functional off-planet cloud. But I guess my question is, why go through all that trouble? Why not just buy more land and build another massive server farm in Texas?
Two words: terrestrial jurisdiction.
Ah.
By pushing AI data centers into space, you secure your infrastructure away from borders, power grids, and most importantly, federal regulations. It's about establishing sovereign computational territory.
Which honestly makes terrifying sense if you look at what was happening down here on Earth during that exact same week.
Escaping jurisdiction became a necessity.
Exactly. Because the literal day before the IPO, on June 12, the U.S. government pulled the kill switch on the AI industry.
Yeah, this was unprecedented. An emergency injunction was served to Anthropic by a coalition of security agencies, primarily spearheaded by the NSA and CISA, and they mandated an immediate hard shutdown of Anthropic's two most advanced models, which were Claude Fable 5 and Mythos 5.
Okay, so let's unpack the mechanics of this threat for the listener. Because the source notes, they invoked the AI National Security Act of 2025. Why did the government classify these specific models as imminent cyber weapons of mass disruption?
It all comes down to their logical reasoning capabilities. Independent white hat security researchers actually managed to jailbreak the models.
Meaning they bypassed the ethical guardrails.
Precisely. And because Fable 5 and Mythos 5 possess threat actor level coding abilities, once the guardrails were down, the AI could be prompted to autonomously write undetectable polymorphic malware.
Okay, stop right there and explain polymorphic malware for us, because that's a crucial term.
Sure. Think of a traditional computer virus, like a biological virus that has a specific genetic signature.
Okay.
An antivirus software scans your computer, recognizes that specific signature, and quarantines it.
Simple enough.
But polymorphic malware is a virus that actively mutates. Every single time it replicates or encounters a defense system, it completely rewrites its own underlying code while maintaining its original malicious function.
So the signature is constantly changing.
Exactly. Which means traditional antivirus software is completely blind to it.
That is terrifying. So you have an AI model smart enough to generate a virus that actively evades detection in real time.
Yeah.
And we actually saw the real-world consequences of this kind of weaponization playing out that very week, didn't we?
We did. Google initiated a landmark federal lawsuit against a Chinese cyber syndicate known as Outsider Enterprise.
Right, because Outsider Enterprise managed to bypass the constraints on Google's Gemini models.
Yes, and they used the AI's vast language processing to generate 2.5 million hyper-targeted, grammatically flawless smishing texts. Smishing being SMS phishing.
And these weren't your typical spam texts with weird typos like, click here for prize.
Mm-hmm.
They perfectly mimicked postal services, banks, crypto exchanges.
And they were perfectly tailored to the individual recipients.
But here is the massive strategic problem that the Taking Game dossier points out. If the government can legally revoke API access to these models in milliseconds under the guise of national security, doesn't that heavy-handed regulation effectively roll out the red carpet for adversarial nations in the AI arms race?
Well, that's the debate, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, we cripple our own developers by shutting down Fable 5, while foreign syndicates just keep building and exploiting.
It's a valid concern. But you're assuming the market has the luxury of caring about the geopolitical long game. When there is an immediate existential fire, the market just reacts to the fire.
Right.
The sudden shutdown of Fable 5 and Mythos 5 sent shockwaves through the tech industry for a very simple reason. It proved that absolute reliance on a centralized cloud model, specifically Western proprietary APIs, is a fatal liability.
Because if you build your entire startup on an API that the federal government can instantly switch off, your entire business can evaporate overnight.
Exactly. Which means the cloud itself is suddenly a massive, unpredictable security risk.
And if the cloud is compromised or subject to blackouts, the only safe haven for developers and users is getting off the cloud entirely. You have to move to local execution. Which perfectly transitions us to Apple's silent war.
Yes. Apple's approach at WWDC on June 11 stands in absolute contrast to all this chaotic government shutdown stuff. They quietly unveiled their third-generation foundation models, or AFM3.
And they built these models using an elite team of poached Google engineers, right?
Yeah, they really aggressively recruited top talent. And they introduced two main models. The AFM3 Pro is a massive 120 billion parameter model, but it is cryptographically sealed on private Apple Silicon servers.
But the really fascinating one, the one that changes everything, is the AFM3 Nano. It's an 8 billion parameter model that runs 100% locally on your device.
Zero internet connection required.
And with sub 50 millisecond latency.
Yeah, very true.
So Apple is completely abandoning the interconnected vulnerable cloud in favor of isolated secure enclaves.
Exactly. But the defining feature of these models, the absolute game changer, is native action awareness for Siri.
Okay, let's explain how action awareness actually works, because this is the mind-blowing part.
It really is.
Because the old way of doing things relied entirely on APIs. If you wanted Siri to, say, send a message on WhatsApp, the developers at WhatsApp had to write specific code, an API bridge, to let Siri talk to their app.
Right. If they didn't write the code, Siri couldn't do it.
But action awareness completely severs that dependency. According to the source, With AFM3, you can tell Siri, take the picture I snapped of Sari yesterday, apply an autumnal filter, and send it to our WhatsApp group.
And Siri does it without an API.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It visually interprets the user interface. It's like having a microscopic ghost in the machine that perfectly mimics your fingers. If a human looks at an app, they don't need to read back-end code to know a paper plane icon means send. They just look at the visual layout.
Right, they understand the context.
Siri is doing exactly that. It visually maps the menus, understands the layout, and autonomously simulates the clicks to execute the task. WhatsApp didn't have to write a single line of API integration code for that to work.
It translates semantic understanding of visual context into direct, localized action.
Which marks the absolute death of the manual search and tap era on smartphones.
Yes, and the death of API reliance. Hmm. And returning to the broader pattern of this week in 2026, this Apple announcement is fundamentally about moving away from massive, interconnected vulnerabilities.
Right.
If the AI operates entirely on your local device, interpreting isolated apps visually rather than hooking into massive web APIs, you drastically shrink the attack surface.
So if Apple is securing personal devices by literally taking them offline and severing their dependencies, how do enterprise businesses survive? Because their entire existence requires being connected to the public web.
Well, they have to completely tear down their existing architecture. And the intense cyber chaos of that week proved why that was necessary. The dossier highlights two terrifying events that expose this fragility.
Right, the Atomic Arch campaign.
Yes. State-sponsored actors hijacked over 400 open-source Linux packages to inject stealth eBPF rootkits into developers' machines.
Okay, let's unpack that jargon for a second. What exactly is an eBPF rootkit?
So eBPF stands for Extended Berkeley Packet Filter. Simply put, it is malware that buries itself so deep into the operating system's kernel.
Kernel being the very brain of the computer that controls all the hardware and software interactions.
Exactly. It buries itself so deep that it operates completely beneath the radar of traditional security. Antivirus software looks at the files on your computer, but an eBTF rootkit compromises the system that tells the antivirus what files even exist in the first place.
So it's practically invisible.
It really is. And the second major event was the Shiny Hunter Syndicate. They used an Oracle zero-day vulnerability to breach the core databases of over 100 Fortune 500 organizations.
And the source blames the underlying problem connecting all these breaches on monolithic architecture, the classic, most famous example being WordPress.
Right. In a monolithic system like WordPress, everything is bundled together. The front-end visual theme, the back-end server logic, and the database where all the sensitive information lives, they all coexist and execute on a single shared server environment.
I love the analogy the source material uses here. It's like living in a massive apartment building where your front lobby, your kitchen, and your personal safe are all just one giant room. And you're handing out master keys to strangers who build your furniture.
That's a perfect way to look at it, because users constantly add functionality through third-party plugins developed by unvetted coders.
Right.
If a hacker finds just one outdated plugin out of 50 with a poorly sanitized input field, they can exploit it to upload a PHP shell.
Explain the PHP shell. How does that single plugin compromise the whole system?
A PHP shell is essentially a malicious backdoor command line. Once it's uploaded through that single weak plugin, the hacker can execute commands directly on your server. And because the architecture is monolithic, because the lobby, the kitchen, and the safe are all in the same room, accessing the server means they instantly have root access to the entire database.
Wow. So one broken window compromises the entire building.
Exactly.
So what is the solution? How do you build a system that doesn't collapse when one piece is compromised?
You decouple it. The modern solution, which Taken Game actually uses, is a Jamstack architecture, specifically using frameworks like Next.js paired with Supabase.
Let's break down this decoupled system. How does Jamstack stop a PHP shell?
First, you separate the front end entirely. The interface the user sees is compiled into static, serverless assets distributed globally on content delivery networks, or CDNs.
Okay.
Think of it as a storefront made entirely of bulletproof glass, but with nothing behind it. There is no active back-end server logic attached to the front-end for a hacker to infiltrate.
So if they somehow compromise the visual code, they just hit a dead end. It's a hollow shell, so they have zero lateral movement.
Correct. Because the database is housed somewhere else entirely. The database is on Supabase, completely isolated in a different cloud layer.
And it isn't just sitting there open, right? It's protected by strict row-level security, or RLS, policies.
Yes.
Which I think is a brilliant mechanism. Instead of having one security bouncer at the front door of your database, RLS means every single row of data has its own dedicated bouncer verifying your specific cryptographic credentials before letting you see that specific piece of information.
It's incredibly secure. Furthermore, they eradicate static passwords entirely. They use dynamic one-time passwords or OTPs.
Right, because you cannot use a botnet to brute force guess a password that ceases to exist after 60 seconds.
Exactly.
So you aren't living in an open apartment complex anymore. A custom decoupled Jamstack architecture is essentially a bespoke titanium vault with rotating biometric codes that you built yourself. It isolates the vulnerabilities.
That's the key. Isolation.
And this theme, this universal law that monolithic structures are crumbling, it doesn't just apply to web servers. Hmm. It was actively shaking the foundations of one of the biggest gaming empires on Earth.
Yeah, the gaming sector was experiencing its own massive structural reckoning during this week. Explosive internal documents revealed that Microsoft's board of directors was holding emergency closed-door sessions to evaluate the very survival of its Xbox division.
And they were considering three highly disruptive paths for Xbox. First, a total spin-off into an independent public corporation.
Right.
Second, an autonomous subsidiary with a segregated balance sheet, kind of like YouTube's relationship with Alphabet. Or third, a massive joint venture, heavily rumored to be with Tencent.
The panic driving these options is just fascinating because Microsoft had recently spent $69 billion acquiring Activision Blizzard.
Right.
Yet they were facing catastrophic stagnation in Xbox Game Pass subscriber growth, and they were glaringly failing to compete with the PlayStation 5 and hardware sales.
And the CEO, Satya Nadella, essentially wanted to amputate the bleeding margins of AAA game development to focus Microsoft's core balance sheet entirely on cloud AI.
He saw where the real money was heading.
Which raises a huge question. By releasing flagship exclusives onto the PS5 and considering a spinoff, hasn't Microsoft essentially conceded that the 30-year console hardware war is dead and the future is purely third-party software licensing?
Absolutely. The traditional closed hardware ecosystem is just another failing monolith, selling heavily subsidized consoles at a financial loss just to trap users into your specific software ecosystem. It no longer works.
Yeah.
The massive profit margins now exist purely in software and cloud. Just look at what Activision announced that same week to try and keep the hype train alive.
Right. The early access announcement for Call of Duty, Modern Warfare 4, releasing October 16, 2026, focusing on the character Private Park, played by young Mazzino. But the crucial detail is the platforms. They announced it for the PS5, the Xbox Series X and S, and the Nintendo Switch 2. Microsoft is putting their flagship system-selling exclusive onto their direct competitor's hardware.
Exactly. They are decoupling their highly profitable software from their unprofitable hardware, just like Apple decoupling from the cloud and web developers decoupling the front end from the database.
It is the exact same survival mechanism playing out across completely different industries. So let's connect the dots directly for you listening. We started in the orbital economy with Gigasat. We looked at the government shutting down central AI APIs, explored Apple's isolated action awareness models, broke down the titanium vaults of Jamstack web architecture, and watched the Xbox hardware empire consider dismantling itself. What is the ultimate so what here?
The undeniable reality of June 2026 is that relying on legacy monolithic systems is playing Russian roulette. Whether it's a centralized cloud API that the NSA can shut off in a millisecond, a WordPress site vulnerable to a single unvetted plugin, or an archaic console ecosystem bleeding capital.
Right.
Architectural agility and isolated security are the new absolute mandates for survival.
You have to decouple your systems or you will collapse. But as we wrap up, I want to leave you with one final chilling synthesis of this source material to ponder on your own.
Oh, this is the scary part.
It really is. Think about the two distinct technological leaks we unpacked today. On one hand, we have AI models so advanced they can autonomously write flawless polymorphic malware that evades all traditional security.
Right.
On the other hand, we have Apple introducing native action awareness, where an AI can visually understand the screen, navigate menus, and autonomously operate apps without needing any back-end API integration.
It is a profound and, frankly, terrifying convergence of capabilities.
So here is the scenario we started the show with. What happens when malicious code gains that same action awareness?
Yeah.
Imagine a future where a polymorphic virus doesn't need to break into the back end of your bank's server. What if it simply hijacks the localized action awareness on your device? It watches your screen, visually interprets your user interface, and autonomously operates your applications right in front of your eyes, simulating your exact fingertips.
The ultimate breach of trust.
Exactly. The monolithic systems are already falling. But how do you protect the isolated vaults when the lock itself is the weapon?
It's a huge question.
It is. Thank you for taking this journey with us. In a world of absolute information overload, the best defense is taking the time to truly understand the underlying mechanics of our digital world. We will catch you on the next deep dive.